Today's daf is Kuf Ayin Aleph. We're going to start at, let's just review from the Mishnah on Kuf Ayin Amud Bet. Misha Parah Miksat Chovo, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Yechlif. Okay, he says we switch, somebody pays back part of a loan, so we switch the shtar. Okay, now he doesn't really give the details, but the details are going to become clear in the sprite we're going to see, that according to him, the edim rip up the shtar and they write, or the baal, you know, the owner rips up a shtar of the shtar, and then they write up a new shtar that says, instead of you owing me 100, you owe me 80. Rabbi Yossi Omer, yichtov shovar. Okay, instead, the malveh writes a shovar and gives it to the loveh and says, you paid me 20, he signs on it, edim sign, and then the loveh keeps the shovar. So Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Nim says that Tzarich Liyot Shomer Shofaro Menach Barim, right? It's annoying for the loveh to have to basically protect this document from mice getting to it. Because if the malveh, the lender, still has a shtar for the whole amount, he could basically go over the entire amount. So Amar Lo Rabbi Yossi, Kach Yafeh Lo V'lo Yerah Kocho Shel Zeh. Now really, we have to protect the best interests of the malveh, which we'll see the two reasons he gives, we'll see them later, we talked about them yesterday already, we'll see them inside today. So now, after we have these two opinions about whether the edim re-sign on the shtar, the assumption is it's the original edim, or Rabbi Yossi says they write a shovar and the loveh keeps it. Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav, Ein alacha lo k'Rabbi Yehuda v'lo k'Rabbi Yossi, ela beitim mikarin hashtar v'kotvin lo shtar acher mizman rishon. Only the beitim is allowed to rip the shtar. And now we see this hityachasu to the Zman Rishon, and we'll see that that, in fact, was what Rabbi Yehuda meant, that when the edim rewrite the shtar, they predate it to the original date of the original loan, because otherwise it's not very effective, because then the malveh, if they write today's date, from the date that he paid back part of the loan, then all the land that he sold in between the time of the beginning of the loan until now won't anymore be meshuabad to this loan. So that's not really going to work for the malveh. So therefore, he says, only the beitin can rip up the shtar and write a new shtar, mizman rishon. So amar le'rav nachman le'rav huna, v'amar le'rav yirmiyah bar'ava le'rav huna, yishmiya le'rav ha'braita, if Rav read this braita, which detailed, okay, we're going to see just a line in the braita, but we're going to see later on today that this braita is, in fact, a more detailed explanation of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi Shitot. If he had seen this braita that explained, Rabbi Yehuda actually says, when he says yachlif, what does he mean? If he sees that Rabbi Yehuda actually thought that it was the edim who were allowed to rip up the shtar, hava hadrabe, he would have been chozer bo. Okay, first of all, what you see here is there's a machloket tana'im, biyosi Rabbi Yehuda, and Rav disagrees with both. Generally, we say a tana can't disagree with an emora can't disagree with other tana'im, but since Rav is the first generation tana emora, sorry, I keep confusing the terms. He's a first generation emora, and he was Rav, who was one of the greatest rabbis, he has the status, it's surprising the Gemara doesn't use the term here, but often the Gemara says, Rav Tanahu Upalik. He has Tanaitic status, and he's allowed to be cholik on other Tanaim. So then, he says back to him, either it was Rav Huna to Rav Nachman, or it was Rav Huna to Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba, Shmi Alei V'lo Hadrabe. In fact, Rav did see that braita, and he still disagreed. Okay, he has the right to disagree with him. So now, why? Why did he disagree? So we have three shito. One is Rabbi Yehuda says the edim write a shtar, right? And they write it. The edim rip up the shtar, write a new shtar, mizman rishon. We have Rabbi Yossi who says shovar, okay? And then we have Rav who says only the beitim can rip up the shtar and write a new shtar, mizman rishon. Okay, so those were our three options. So now he's going to explain why he thinks that his shita is right and the others aren't. Bishlama beidina, or why he didn't. It's really why he didn't agree with Rabbi Yehuda. Bishlama beidina alima lavkue mamona ela edim shaslu shlichutan chuzrim vosin shlichutan. What he basically is saying is that when we write a new shtar, we don't really have the rights to predate a shtar, even though we're writing it. It seems strange to us because what they're really doing is just rewriting a part of the shtar that was true in the beginning. So let's use years, it's easier. Let's say the shtar was written in 2016, the original one. And in 2017, he paid back the money. So part of the money, thank you. So in 2017, he pays back part, and that's where we're at right now. So if we're going to write 2017 in the shtar, that would be the basic. But we can't rewrite a shtar about something that happened a long time ago. So we can only really write it from right now. So if we can only write it from right now, how do we allow you to predate it? Predating it is basically saying that right now we're going to basically move money from people's hands to other hands because we're going to be meshabed the nechassim from before. Now, it's true they were meshuabedim to begin with, but the assumption is that now, if we're writing a new shtar, we can only write a shtar from today. So therefore, what does he say? Beitina alima. Alima means has strength. Lafkue mamona. We've learned this. Hefka beitin hefka, right? They can basically take money and move it around. But only beitin has the power to do that. So the courts can basically predate it. But ela edim, shaslush lichutan, that did their first testimony, right, when they first testified on the first thing, chozrim vosin shlichutan, who gave them the power to now rewrite the shtar predating it? Okay? Rav doesn't like that idea. He thinks that really what's going on here is the hafka, mamon, which only the courts have the right to do. So then they say, really, velo, v'hamar of Yehuda, marav, edim kotvin afilu asara shtarot al sadeh chat. Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav himself that edim can write even 10 shtarot. Okay, there's two different possibilities about what this means. Either they write 10 shtarot from the beginning, so he has a lot of copies of a shtar mechira, so he can protect himself in case he loses. Or 10 is obviously an exaggerated number. Or it means that he can write 10 shtarot, and every time it gets lost, he can write a new one. And the assumption is that you can go back and fix the date on it, right, to the earlier date. So what are the answer?
I thought you couldn't write more shtarot because if one got
yafe. So you could write it, remember, without a chrayim, right? We had said that, but yeah. It's a bit of a question. So now we're going to answer it. Rav Yosef Amar b'shtar matana. That's only in a case of shtar matana where what? There's no achrayut, exactly what you said. In other words, you can only rewrite 10 shtarot to prove that you own this land, but not if someone takes it away from you, a bal chov of the person who sold it to you, you wouldn't be able to get money back from him or get land back from him for this land. Okay, you wouldn't have achrayut, or, because it was a matana, let's say he just gave it to you, or rab amar b'shtar she'en bo achrayut. Right? It would only be to rewrite a shtar that doesn't have achrayut. Okay? And then, what do you see here? That the edim, okay, this is basically that we brought this as a contradiction to Rav, but now we see, no, the edim can only write it in a way that they're not actually being mafkia mamon from anybody because it doesn't have any mamon relevance. It only means that you can prove that this land is your land, but not to take back land from anybody else, like if people took it away from you because they were owed or because it was stolen or something like that. Okay. Now we're going to go back to my braita. So what's this braita that they quoted at the very bottom of Kufayin Amubet? Detanya, Haresha hayu noshimbo elef zuz, upara mehem chamesh meot zuz. Okay, so he owed 1,000 zuzim, and he paid back 500. Eidim mekarina tashtar v'kotvin lo shtar acher mizman rishon, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. This is what we saw already. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, the eidim can rip up the shtar, and they write a new shtar from the early date. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Shtar ze yehem munach bimkomo. We leave the shtar as is, the original shtar for the full amount. Ve, you can already guess, right? The yichtivu shovar. And you write a shovar. This is no chiddush, this we already read. We already learned it, as we discussed it in the Mishnah. But now he adds his two reasons here. Umipnei shnei dvarim amru kotvin shovar. Okay, there's two reasons why I believe that you should write a shovar, Rabbi Yossi says. Achat. One is to motivate the loved to pay back his loan, right? If the loved knows that the malva has a shtar for 1,000 zuz, and he's got a shovar in his property for 500 zuz, and what's he worried? The mice are going to eat his shovar, or he might lose it, or something might happen to it. So therefore, he's going to hurry and try to pay back the loan. Okay, that's number one. Ve'echat, and another reason is, so it's also, these are both things to benefit the malva. One is so that the lover will pay back his money quicker. And number two, so that he'll be able to get the land from the original date. Okay, now this is a bit of a complicated thing because Rabbi Yossi is saying this is why you should agree with my shita and not Rabbi Yehuda's. But what did Rabbi Yehuda say? Kotvin shtar mizman rishon. So also according to Rabbi Yehuda, the malva can get land mizman rishon. So the Gemara is going to immediately ask that. V'ha Rabbi Yehuda nami mizman rishon kamar. So the answer is, hachi kamar le Rabbi Yossi le Rabbi Yehuda. This is really what Rabbi Yossi meant to say. Imizman Rishon Ka'amar Tanei. You have to remember, in the Braita, Rabbi Yehuda says explicitly Zman Rishon, but in the Mishnah, he only said Yachlif. You can switch the shtar, meaning you can rip it up and write a new one. But it wasn't clear from the Mishnah from what date we're dating it. So it's very likely that Rabbi Yehuda didn't specify when he was telling Rabbi Yossi his shita that he meant Mizman Rishon. So Rabbi Yossi says like this, I don't know when you plan to write the date on your shtar according to you, but Imizman Rishon Ka'amarta, if you're saying we're going to predate this new shtar to Zman Rishon, so Pagina Malei B'chada, then I only disagree with you for one reason, which is I want to basically incentivize the Lovet to pay back the loan quicker, and according to your idea about writing a new shtar, that's not going to encourage the Lovet to pay any earlier. And Imizman Sheni Kamarta, and if you think that the Edom are writing the shtar according to today's date, well then I have two disagreements with you, right? Pagina Nale Batarte, which is number one, we want to encourage the Lovet to pay the money quicker, and number two, you're going to mess up the Malveh that he won't be able to take the property from any lien property that was sold from the original date until the current date. So basically, he says, if you say that, then I disagree with you about two. But in fact, really, Rabbi Yehuda only said one, in which case, right, he only disagreed really about one, because even Rabbi Yehuda agreed that we write on the shtar Zman Rishon. So just to review, we have Rabbi Yehuda, who says the Edom rip up the shtar and write a new shtar, and they're allowed to backdate the date of the shtar. We have Rabbi Yossi, who disagreed with that, because he said it's not... We want to incentivize, therefore we're going to write a shofar, because we want to incentivize the Lovet to pay back the money. And then we have Rav, who said only the Beit Din is allowed to write a shtar Mizman Rishon, and the Edom don't have the power to do that, because they're basically, they should really only be writing today's date. What gives them the power to write an earlier date if they're writing the shtar today? And only the court, because there's financial ramifications to that, and therefore only the court has the power to do that, because the court can move money, right? Hefker, Beit Din, Hefker, they can decide that money that's yours is really someone else's, but an individual doesn't have the right to do that.
Also, the first one is setting a precedent of being able to write the wrong date.
Right. So it gets into complications about, you could maybe learn from here that, oh, you could write a different date. We're actually going to get into some cases where maybe you could write an earlier date or maybe you can't. We're going to talk about it soon. Okay. Tanu Rabbanan. We're going to get into Shtar Mukdam and Shtar Meuchar again today. Okay, new Braita. Shtar shezmano katuv b'shabbat, o ba'asara b'tishrei. Let's say you have a shtar that was written, the date is Shabbat, or the date is Yom Kippur. Okay, where we know that the shtar could not have been written on that date. Okay. Shtar me'ucharhu, v'kasher, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi posel. Okay, so what do we have here? How do we treat this shtar? Do we assume that it's a lie, it's a forgery, because they wrote the wrong date, right? Shabbat, you can imagine them making a mistake because they just write a random date, right? And who looked at the calendar to see, you know, did they have those 120-year calendars, you know, that they could check? And so basically, you could see them making some sort of error. Yom Kippur is a little strange. I saw somebody who wrote that it's very possible that he wrote a date in the Loazi and he didn't realize it was Yom Kippur. You know, like that's an option. Okay, anyway, this kind of a shtar, what can we assume? It's a shtar me'ucharu, v'kasher. You can assume it's a shtar me'uchar. Okay, we can assume that it was written on a date past the date. Maybe he wasn't sure of the date exactly, and he just wrote the next upcoming date. Now, why do we assume it's a shtar me'uchar, not a shtar mukdam? Right, now remember, a shtar me'uchar is good, a shtar mukdam is no good. Why is a shtar mukdam no good? Because if you write the shtar for an earlier date, let's say it's a loan, right? So now they can come take property that you sold before the loan, but they're not allowed to take property that you sold before the loan. They're only allowed to take property that was in your possession at the time of the loan. So if you write a mukdam, it's a problem. If it's a me'uchar, it just limits what kind of land the malva can take back, but it doesn't mean he's going to take land from someone shelo ka'alacha. It just means that instead of him being allowed to take land from people that he sold the land to in the interim, right, the first, let's say it's written a month late. So if the Loves sold land in that first month, he wouldn't be able to collect his loan from there, but he'd still be able to collect from people later, and he wouldn't ever collect from someone, you know, shelo, like in a non-allowed, non-permissible manner. Why do we assume it's a shtar meuchar? Why don't we assume it's a shtar mukdam, right? So some people say it's based on hamasim chaver alav haraya. In other words, we don't have proof to say it's mukdam, so we can assume it's meuchar and it's okay. Right, we'd rather say the shtar is. There's also an assumption that Edim wouldn't sign on a shtar unless it's a kasher shtar. So an Edim know that a shtar muktam wouldn't work. So the assumption is they just put a later date rather than an earlier date. Okay. But Rabbi Yossi's posel. So Amar la Rabbi Yehuda, and as Rabbi Yossi says, even that kind of shtar is no good. So Amar la Rabbi Yehuda, v'alo ma'aseh, balafanecha b'tzipori v'echsharta. But there was a case where this happened in Tzipori and you said it was okay. Amar lo, k'shechsharti b'zeechsharti. Well, when I allowed it, the shtar me'uchar, I only allowed it in a particular case where it was written on Shabbat or Asara b'tishrei, but otherwise, I wouldn't allow a shtar me'uchar. So then we say, what do you mean, bezech sharta? Ha, Rabbi Yehuda nami bezech ka'amar. Rabbi Yehuda was also saying, just in this case. In other words, the whole discussion was about this particular case. So what do you mean, I only allowed in this case? That's exactly what they were arguing about. So Amar Rabbi Padat, now Rabbi Padat's going to explain exactly what they're arguing about. Hakol modim shimuskaknu la'onato shel shtar, v'nimtzeit onato mechuvenet b'shabbat o b'asara b'tishrei, sheshtar me'uchar hu b'kasher. Everybody agrees that if, remember this word, huskaknu, we check. If we check into the time of the shtar, the onato is the zman. If we check into the time of the shtar, and it turns out that it was exactly landed on Shabbat, or on Yom Kippur, clearly it's a shtar mu'uchar, and we're going to say it's kasher. Lo nechleku, ela b'shtar mu'uchar ba'alma. In other words, there's a difference between a regular shtar mu'uchar and this kind of shtar mu'uchar. If we know that this action happened, but the date is written on a date that it couldn't possibly have been written, then we're going to assume that maybe they just didn't know the date and they put it a little bit later. But their real debate is about a general shtar mu'uchar, because the case that Rabbi Yossi was matir, or a machshir, was a case of a chabad, right? It was either Shabbat or it was Yom Kippur. But the case where they're really arguing about is a regular shtar mu'uchar. De Rabbi Yehuda l'ta'ameh, and now we're going to connect between shtar mu'uchar and whether or not you can write a shovar. Okay, we're going to see how. Rabbi Yehuda l'ta'ameh da'amar ein kotvin shovar v'lo mafit no nafit mine chorva. If you can't write a shovar, then there's no danger of having a shtar mu'uchar. Okay, really we're going to have to explain what it is the other way and then you'll understand. V'Rabbi Yossi l'ta'ameh da'amar kotvin shovar v'nafit mine chorva. We've discussed this already few days ago, or I don't remember how long ago, but if you can write a shofar, so let's say you took out the loan in 2016, and you pay back the loan in 2016, so your shofar is marked 2016, but you wrote a shtar me'uchar, and the date is 2017. So let's say you write your shtar in 2016, but you write 2017. Now, why anyone would write a shtar me'uchar is unclear to me. Okay? But let's say you wrote a shtar for 2017. Maybe it was the truth is I could see why. Maybe it was part of the Lovet wanted to be able to sell some property and didn't want it to be lien. So he said, let's just write a date in a year from now. You'll give me time to sell that stuff. You'll promise me that you won't be mishabed those nechassim. But anything from there on in, right? In other words, the Malva was being extra nice to the Lovet, I guess you could say. So then what happens? They write it, but the Lovet then finds the money right away and he pays back the loan. Okay? Now, the Malva, let's say, claims, I lost my shtar. Okay, I don't have the shtar anymore. So he writes a shovar for the guy who paid it back. Okay, right? He writes a shovar and says, okay, fine. The malva says, I can't find my shtar. I can't find the shtar, so therefore, I'll write you a shovar. The shovar is obviously dated when he pays it back, which is 2016. And then comes 2017, and he pulls out a shtar that says 2017. And the lover says, what do you mean? I paid it back. Here's my shovar. But his shovar is dated 2016. And the malva says, what are you talking about? That wasn't connected to this. Don't look, it predates this shtar. So therefore, the malva can basically collect twice on the loan. Okay? So therefore, now we understand why Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda disagree about shtar mu'uchar, because if you can write a shovar, then the malva can play a game there and basically claim this loan twice. And if you can't write a shovar, then there's no way the malva can do anything, because what happens if you can't write a shovar, according to Rabbi Yehuda? The malva loses his shtar, he can't claim his loan. Okay, it's his tough luck. Because it's the malva's responsibility to keep his shtar. If he loses it, it's his fault. Okay? So he basically can never, right, the Lovet would never pay the money unless he sees the shtar. So therefore, he can't play that game with him. Now comes Rav Huna, and he says like this: I'm Rav Huna, Bereit Rav Yoshua. Okay, not Stam Rav Huna. Rav Huna, the son of Rav Yoshua. Afilu lemanda amar kotvin shovar. Now he says, according to Rabbi Yossi, that you can write a shovar. He actually doesn't allow you to write a shovar in the case I just told you. Okay, hanimile apalga, avalakule lo. He says, I believe that when Rabbi Yossi said, it's basically going to be a machloket about when Rabbi Yossi says you can write a shovar, does he mean only in the case of our Mishnah? Right? Remember, Rabbi Yossi was talking about in a case of Misha Parah Miktzat Chovo. In that case, when you only pay back part of your loan, then we allow you to write a shovar because you have no other, right? How else are you going to pay back half a loan if we don't allow you to write a shovar, right? Because he doesn't want you to be ripping up the shtar. So he says in that case he allows it. Avala kule lo. But he doesn't allow you to write a shovar if you actually pay back the entire loan. In that case, right? So in that case, he agrees that if the malveh comes to the loveh and says, you owe me money, and he doesn't have a shtar to show for it, the loveh doesn't have to pay back the money at all. Okay? He actually agrees. Okay? Why is that? Because it's not fair, right? Who's the responsibility on to keep the shtar? The malveh. And if he loses the shtar, it's not the loveh's responsibility now to have to keep this shovar forever. Because what will happen in that case? If the loveh gets a shovar, and the shovar, let's say, gets destroyed, and then the malveh comes back with the full shtar and says, give me the money, that's not fair to the loveh. So the loveh can't be made responsible if the malveh was irresponsible and lost his shtar. But if he pays back part of it, then we need to, and if he comes to pay back the whole thing, then we need to protect the loveh because he paid back the whole thing. If he only pays half, then it's in our interest to protect both sides. And that's why we write a shovar. Okay? In other words, he says, if the loveh is willing to pay back everything, well, then we have to protect his rights. And we can't let the malveh, we can't leave open this safek that maybe the malveh is going to pull out a shtar and the loveh is going to lose his shovar. But in a case where he's only paying back part, and we need to basically, you know, protect both sides because there's still half a loan out, then we're going to allow a shovar because that's the only solution he sees. And then we also have to protect the malveh's interest to incentivize the loveh to pay back the rest, right? And that's why we're going to write the shovar, and the loveh just has to be responsible not to lose it. Okay. But then the Gemara says, velohi, afilu akule kachvinan. But the Gemara says that's not the case, though. In fact, even though Rav Huna Barita Rav Yoshua thought that Rabbi Yossi was only talking about the case of our Mishnah, where he pay back part, no, in fact, Rabbi Yossi thinks that you could write a shovar anytime. How do we know this? Ki had to Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef. These are the same characters we saw yesterday. Hava Masik Bezuzeh Be Rabbi Abba. Remember, he had a loan out with Rabbi Abba, and Rabbi Abba wasn't paying the money back. Ata Lekameh, in this case, though, was a bit of a different situation. Yesterday was where Rabbi Abba said, I gave it back in front of Ploni U Ploni, and then there was a question, do we force him to bring the witnesses or not? Sarich Levarer. Here's something else happened. You got to wonder why Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef lent Rabbi Abba money again, right, after he had issues getting it back. But it could be these are just two versions of the same loan, right? You never know. There's always stories that float about. On to the Kamejah Rabbi Chanina Bar Papi. He went in front of Rabbi Chanina Bar Papi, which was not the person he went in front of last time. Amar le havli zuzai. He says, give me the money back. Amar li havli shtarai ushko zuzcha. He says, well, show me the shtar and I'll pay you the money. Amar le shtacha irkasli. Right? He says, my shtar got lost. Ichtov lach tavra. Okay, so we'll write a shovar instead. So Amar le ha Rav Shmuel da Amri Travayu ain't kotvin shovar. He says, but Rav and Shmuel both say we don't write shovarim. So sorry. So what does he say? Amar man yahiv le me afra de Rav Shmuel raminam be'enin. Okay, this is a weird line, but what he's trying to say is I respect Rav and Shmuel tremendously. Okay, I'll explain how he says that. Man yavle, anyone who could give me from the afar of Rav and Shmuel, like from their dead bodies, let's say, you know, or, you know, if you could give me some of the afar, Ramina Ba'enin, I put it in my eyes. It's a way of saying, I mean, you would never say this nowadays, but it's a way of saying, I have such respect for them. However, okay, with that being said, HaRabbi Yochanan v'Harish Lakish, Amri Travayu Kutvin Shavar. Okay, maybe Rav and Shmuel said you don't write a Shavar, But Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish said, you're right, a shavar. V'chein, and not only did they say it, ki ata rabin, ama Rabbi Ila, kotvin shavar. By the way, you can see right here, that's machlok at Eretz Yisrael, Bavel. Because Rabbi and Shmuel were the big rabbis in Bavel, and at the same time, Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, right, and Rabin later, who brings in the name of Rabbi Eli, who was earlier, also said Kotvin Shavar. They're all from Eretz Israel. Okay? Umistabra di Kotvin Shavar. And he says, and not only that, but it makes sense that we should say right, we write a Shavar. Why? Ti isal kadatach en Kotvin Shavar. If you want to say we can't write a Shavar, avad shtaro shel ze, yochal halav echade, if his shtar gets destroyed, you know, gets lost or destroyed, so yochal halav echade, the lova should be able to keep all that money and be happy, right? Right, he was happy, and he'll be happy. In other words, why should the lova, just because the guy loses his shtar, so the lova gets to keep all the money? Sounds crazy. Matkif la abaye, Abaye says, well, what's the flip side? And as you can argue the case both ways. Elamai kotvin shovar. If you say kotvin shovar, then what could happen? Avad shovaro shel ze yochal halav echade, right? But if we say you write a shovar, then if the lova loses the shovar, then what? The malva gets to keep the money? In other words, this is, right, this is, it could go either way. So Amar le Rava, Rava says, this is what's going to be kovea in. Yes, that's true. Avad shovaro shel ze yochal halav echade. If the lova loses his shovar, then in fact the malve can reclaim the loan a second time. Why? Because evad lova liish malve. If we're going to have to side with one of them, we always side with the malve, and that's because when the lova took a loan and the malve did him a nice favor by giving him money, then the lova became subjugated to the malve. In which case, if we're going to side one way, we're going to side to protect the malve over the lova. Now, someone pointed out, and it's very obvious, that these two things aren't really a good comparison. Because in the case that the malve, loses the shtar and can't take back his money, the lova just says, I don't need to pay you, right? But he doesn't do anything. He doesn't use any sort of trickery. Whereas if the malve tries to claim that the guy never paid him back, he's actually lying, right? He's basically lying and saying he's collecting the loan twice. So it's more of like a forgery than the lova just not paying him back. However, we end up siding with the malve in any case. I mean, both of them in essence are doing some wrongdoing because the lova knows he owes the money and isn't paying it back. But it's not the same as double, you know, taking the loan twice, you know, claiming that lying about it.
But you have to encourage people to loan money.
Right, that exactly. Evad lova liish malve is clearly because we want to encourage people to loan money. If we don't protect the malva's interest, then nobody will ever loan money. Yes. Okay, tnan hatam. Now we're going to go into the shtar mukdam and shtar mukha. Shtarei chov ha-mukdamim psulim, va-mukharim ksherim. So now, okay, so we say shtar mukhar, we said this already, is kasher, because worst case, the malva just loses out on a bit of property, but he's not going to be able to take property from someone who he's not allowed to, whereas in shtar mukdam he could. It would allow him to basically take property that was sold actually before the time of the loan, and that's not fair to the lokach. But Amar Rav Hamnuna lo shanu ela shtarei halva'a. Aval shtarei mekach umemkar afilu mukharim nami psulin. Okay, he says, this is only true for shtarei halva'a, but deeds of sale, even a me'uchar, is also pasul. Why is that? My taima, zimnin demazbin le'ara b'nisan, v'katav le'betishrei. I find this Nisan Tishrei always confusing because it depends. It's not so obvious that one comes before the other. So I'm going to use years, okay? It's just easier. So let's say he sells him land in 2016, and he writes in the shtar 2017, Now, why do you sell land? Because you need money, right? And he buys back the land in 2016 still. And then what happens? Right? When 2017 comes along, right? He'll come back and say, hey, you sold it to me again. Okay? You follow? That if he sells it to him in 2016, buys it back, and then... But the whole document says 2017, then the buyer can come and pull out his shtar and say, hey, look, it says you sold it to me in 2017. It's true. You bought it back in 2016, but you clearly sold it to me again. And he can claim based on that that he has the property. So then they say, Ihachi shtarei hava'a nami. The same could hold true for shtar hava'a. Why? Zimnin di yazif benisan. Okay, again, he could loan him the money in 2016. Bekatav lashtar b'tishrei, and he could write the shtar in 2017, and then mitrami lezuze bene bene uparale, right? And then he could pay the money in between. Va'amarle havli shtarai, and he could say, "Give me the shtar." Va'amarle irkasli. This is exactly what we discussed before. Bekatav letavra, and he could write a shovar, right, for 2016. V'chimate zimne, and then when 2017 comes along, mapele va'amarle hanehashi hu di yazif minai, right? So again, which is exactly what we were concerned about before, that if we allow shovarim, what will happen? A shtar muchar will also be no good. So how could the Mishnah say a shtar muchar is good, and Rav Amnuna could say that's only by shtar hava'a? Even by shtar hava'a, shtar muchar should be a problem, because again, he could claim it's lost, the document, the shtar, and then he could repay the money back, and then he could pull out the shovar. They write a shovar, and then comes the date of the shtar, and he could pull out the shtar and say, you owe me money. The guy says, here's my shavar, but what's the problem? The shavar has an earlier date, and he could say, that had nothing to do with this loan. This loan was after. So what are the answer? The one who wrote the Mishnah, kasavar ein kotvin shavar, he holds we don't write shavarim. We don't allow shavarim. And since we don't allow shavarim, therefore, we allow a shtar meuchar. But if we allow shovarim, remember, just like we said before, then we can't allow shtar muchar. That was exactly what we said before, that Rabbi Yossi wouldn't allow shtar muchar. Now we're going to see some developments that happen. Amar le Rav Yemer le Rav Kahana. Amar le Rav Yirmiyah midifti le Rav Kahana. Okay, either Rav Yemer or Rav Yirmiyah, you can see how they would confuse their names. V'ha'idna de katvinan shtarei muchare v'katvinan tavra amai kavdinan hachi. Okay, I'm going to read the words in parentheses. So nowadays, they're basically saying this whole thing kind of got lost somewhere, because nowadays we both write shtar meuchar as kasher, and we write shovarim. So how could we possibly do this? So what does he say? Amar le, batar da amar lehu Rabbi Abba l'safre. This is, by the way, the rest of this little section is going to be very interesting in terms of showing how halacha develops, or in this case, it's not necessarily halacha, it's Takanon and other things, how things develop over time and sometimes end up not like the original halacha. Okay, so obviously, even though shtar muchar and whether or not you write a shavar were dependent on each other, whether you hold it's okay or not, got lost. And in the end, they both write a shtar muchar and they write shovarim. So what does he say? After Rabbi Abba told the Sofrim, ki katvinu shtar muchare kitvu hachi. He told the Sofrim that if you're going to write a shtar meuchar for somebody, you should write this in the shtar. Shtar dinan, this shtar, lo bizmane katvene, ela ichrenuhu v'katvenuhu. Yes, you can write a shtar meuchar, but it has to be written with certain caveat. You have to write, this shtar is a shtar meuchar. And then they know that if they pull out a shovar, they won't accept the shovar because, right, in other words, they won't be able to say, oh, that shovar predated the shtar mu'uchar, because they know that the shtar was mu'uchar and they don't know when the shtar was actually written. So if the guy pulls out a shovar, we could accept it and say, ah, you don't have to pay back the money, even if the date predated the shtar. So Amar le Rav Ashi le Rav Kahana. V'ha'idna, okay, more developments, but nowadays, but nobody writes that in a shtar muchar. In other words, yes, nowadays we write a shtar muchar, but yes, they said to include that line. Rabbi Abba told the Sofrim to do that, but nobody does that anymore. So now, how do you explain it? So what does he say? Batar da amar le Rav Safra le Safra. But now Rav Safra added a different takana, which means you no longer need the takana of Rabbi Abba. What did he say? Ki katvinu hane tvare. When people write a shovar, Iyedeitu zimna deshtare kitvu. Ilo kitvu stama. Says like this. If you know the date of the original shtar, then you write it in the shovar. You basically say, this shovar relates to the shtar whose date is X. Which means you could write this in 2016 and say, I'm paying back the loan of the shtar that says 2017. And then you resolve the issue. And ilo, this is very interesting, kitvu stama. call Emma Dinafik Lerea. If not, you don't write any date in the Shovar. You just don't write a date. Because otherwise, any date you would write could cause some problem. Now, what becomes interesting about this? The Rashbam points out that according to this, if you loan someone money and they paid you back with and you wrote a shovar, you should never lend them that same amount of money again. Because they can always pull out that shovar that has no date on it and claim that they pay back the money. Yes, it's nice, it resolves one problem, but it causes other problems. Because if you have no date, well then, they could use it down the road, which is very tricky. So while it sounds nice in this way, right, the Rashbam has good insight and says, oh wait, but there's a problem on the other side. Amar le Ravina le Rav Ashi, v'amar le Rav Ashi le Rav Kahana, v'haha idna, and then some people say it was Ravina said to Rav Ashi, some people say Rav Ashi said to Rav Kahana, v'haha idna, by the way, I'm going to try to go ahead to the Mishnah, that way we can start getting through to the Shabbat af. V'haha idna delo ka'avdinan hachi. Yeah, but nowadays we don't do that, we don't do that. In other words, nobody writes anything in their Shtar Mukhar. Nobody writes that line. And nobody writes in their Shovar, you know, that it was for a Shtar of a particular date or they don't date it. No, that doesn't happen. So Amar Leh, here's a great line. Rabbanan tikune tikine. Look, Rav Safra and Rabbi Abba, they made these takanot to protect people's rights. Okay? Manda avid, avid. Manda lo avid, ihuhu da afsid anafshe. In other words, these rabbis made takanot to protect people from forgeries, right? From the other side doing some sort of, you know, playing a trick on him. So if you go by those takanot and you go to the sofer to protect yourself and you tell the sofer, write this in the shovar to protect me or write this in the shtar to, you know, to protect me, then great. And if you don't, well, it's your tough luck. So it's a good line in terms of, you know, the rabbis tried, right? There's a limit to what they could do. They can recommend suggestions to people to avoid forgeries and things like that. But if people are going to ignore their takanot, well, that's not their fault. I thought it was a very interesting, right? We tried, and it's unfortunate that it didn't last. And this is very common, by the way, that they would, you know, you can imagine. They kind of said, let's do this to protect, and then, you know, it could be it was so infrequent that it happened and people just stopped bothering. And then, or maybe it was so infrequent that they did a Shtar Mukhar that people just didn't really remember this halacha anymore, you know, this takana. And it just kind of disappeared, you know, and then people didn't do it anymore. But what they're basically saying is there are protective measures and if you want to protect yourself, you can. Okay? And that's what you should do. And if not, and people take advantage, well, that's not our fault. It's like a way of, you know, releasing responsibility. Amar lehu Rava Barav Shila Lahanu Katve Shtara Akniata. He said to these people who were writing Shtar Hakna'a to other people, meaning like a Shtar Matano or a Shtar Mechira, where he's giving, right, the Shtar gives the responsibility to the other person. Ki Katvitu Shtare Akniata. Okay, now what would happen in these Shtar Akniata? What really would happen was somebody would sell a piece of land or give a gift to someone on a particular date. But the sofrim weren't necessarily there. So assuming they did a kinyan on that date. And then later they wrote a shtar. So now the question is going to be, what date do you write on the shtar? Because really the kinyan happened earlier. But the shtar is being written later. So he says to them, Ki katvinu shtar akniata, when you write the shtar akna'a, I yaditu yoma dekanitu be kitvu. If you know the exact date that the kinyan happened, you know that it was January 1st, so write January 1st. Vilo kitvu yoma dekaimitu be. If not, then write the date that you're writing the shtar. Write today's date, okay? So either you know for sure which date the kinyan happened on and you write that date, or you write today's date. Ki hechi delo mitchazei kashikra. Because if you just pick a random date, you say, I know it was after January 1st, you're not sure exactly what date, and you just write randomly January 10th, that could look like a sheker because someone could come later and say, I know it didn't happen on January 10th. And then the document will look problematic. So at least stick to either the date, some date that you know of for sure. Adif to remember the date that originally happened on. If not, at least write today's date. It's interesting to think about, right? Nowadays, people keep track of dates in all sorts of ways, right? If you bought a property, you probably mark it down on your calendar. I'm going to meet the guy, you know, you'd have it on record. In those days, like, who remembered exactly what date it was?
But also January 11th or whatever, it could be a Shabbat.
Right, exactly. So, if you write the wrong date, right, it could be Shabbat again, then we'd say probably it was Mochar, but yeah.
We don't have Eidim on these starting?
No, the Eidim who signed, so the question is, do they remember? Now, presumably what happened, let's say Aviva sold a property to you, and then there were two Eidim who saw, and then those two Eidim come to sign on the shtar a few months later, or 2 weeks later, and they just don't remember exactly what date it happened, what date they witnessed the event. So if they don't know the day they witnessed the event, then they write today's date, the date of the shtar.
So you don't need the witnesses when you're writing the actual shtar?
You need the witnesses to see, but they, when they see the transaction, it doesn't necessarily mean they have the sofer there who has the shtar written up. Okay? That's why we saw cases where people would write a shtar beforehand so that the shtar was there and ready. But there were many cases where they wrote the shtar later.
Ketubah before the actual wedding.
And then you just bring it. Right. But in those days, it was very common where they might write a shtar later. They might not have written it yet. So, Amar Lehu Rav Lesafre. So he says, V'chein Amar Lehu Rav Huna Lesafre. Also Rav Huna would tell the Sofrim. Ki kaimitu b'shile, kitvu b'shile. Va'af agav de mesiran l'chumile b'hini. Okay, with Shini and Haley, we've seen the cities before. They were right near each other. If you're standing in Shile when you write the shtar, even if the action happened, the kinyan happened in Hini, you write Shili. Okay, the assumption the Mefreshim say is that you write both. You write, the sale happened in Hini, but I'm standing now today in Shili, or whatever, whichever one I just said. But and kikai mitu bihini, kitvu bihini, va'afagav de mesiman l'chum mile b'shili. Okay, you have to write both, and what's the concern? The concern is, again, it'll be mechzei kashikra. Someone will say, what do you mean? It says in Hini, but I know that the sale, that I remember you writing the shtar in Shili. And then they'll say, something's wrong with the shtar. Okay, so therefore you write both locations, both the location where it happened and the location where you're standing right now when you write the shtar. Amar Rava, haima denakit shtar bar mea zuze, va'amar shavya niale trei b'nei chamishin chamishin. Okay, now we're going to have somebody, we're going to have three cases. Okay, in this case, somebody comes to court with 100 zuz shtar, the malveh, and he says, I want you to split this. It's like getting change of 100 shekel, right? I want you to split this to me into two shtarot of 50. Why? Because I'm going to go to the loveh now, and I know he wants to pay me half. We'll rip up that shtar, and then I'll have a shtar for 50. Okay? It's really the case of our Mishnah, right, about how you resolve this. So it's a little bit of a different solution, though. This is, let's go before, and let's turn one into two. So it sounds like it would be reasonable, but what did they say? Lo mashvinan lehu. We don't let him split this into two. Why? My taima, avdu rabana milta, denichale lamalve, venichale lalove. The assumption here is if the malveh comes into court and asks the court to do this without the love's knowledge, so he's basically, he's doing, he has to do something that's both good for the malveh and good for the love. And in this case, it's in both of their best interests to keep this one big shtar. Why? Each one for different reasons. Nichale l'malve to keep one big shtar. Why? Kadeshi chof l'poro. Because if they have one big shtar and then we split it, right, then he'll only have a full shtar to pay back and the love won't have a shofar, in which case he's got no incentive to pay back that loan any quicker. V'nichale l'love to keep the big shtar. Why? Ki hecha denifkam shtare. Okay, here's another concern that we didn't talk about yet, which is he'd rather have a shtar that's half right, right, that's half. Okay, in other words, what's the issue? If the malveh comes to him with a full shtar and says, you owe me 100, and he says, what do you mean? I already paid you back 50. What's that a case of? Modeh b'miktzat. What happens in modeh b'miktzat? If the malveh wants to get his money back, what does he have to do? He has to swear that the loveh didn't pay him the other 50. So therefore, and if he just pulls out a full shtar and the loveh says, I don't know what you're talking about, then the loveh has to pay the full amount and without the malveh swearing. So basically, to rip up this shtar and create two shtarot is bad for the loveh also. Now, it's bad for the loveh because now he's got a shovar and he's got to worry about the shovar, but it's also good for the loveh because now it'll become a case of modeh b'miktzat if he wants. And he can claim, I pay back the other half, and the malveh will have to swear about it. It's a way of protecting him. Now we're going to do the exact reverse. Obviously, if this is good for the malveh and that's good for the loveh, then if we have a reverse case, we can say that each of the ta'anot flip on their sides. You'll see in a second. Let's say they took out two separate loans of 50 and 50. Va'amar shavinu niel echad, and he says, the Malva says, I want to turn this into just one shtar. I don't want to have to protect two shtarot. I'd rather just have one. Barmea, right, for 100. Lo mashvinan le. Okay, we don't allow him. Why? Because Rabbanan Milta, dinichale lamalva, v'nichale lelove. We're only going to do this if it's good for both sides. Now, nichale lamalva, it's both in their best interest to keep it as two separate ones. Why? Nichale lamalva, ki hechad lo nifkam shtare. It's bad for the malva if we turn this into one big star, because if the lobe claims I paid you half, then the malva will have to, right, we'll have to, in other words, he agrees that he owes him, right, he'll basically have to end up swearing. It'll be a case of bode b'miksa. And the malva will have to swear that he didn't pay him back the whole thing. And it's good for the love because then he won't end up having a shovar. So basically, right, we took those things and we turned them on their sides. Okay, last case, Amar of Ashi, Haima denakit shtara bar mea zuze. Va'amar shavinu niale chabar chamishin. He says, listen, I want you to turn this mea into a shtar of chamishin because the lova is going to pay back the money, right? He's basically paying me back the other 50. So lo mashvinale, my taima. Amrinan, hai mifra pare. Va'amar li havli shtare. Va'amar li irkas. V'katav le tfara. Umafik hai. Va'amar le hai achrinehu. Right, so 1 minute. If this is, let me just remember this case. He takes out a shtar of mea zuzeh and he says, "I just want one of 50, so we don't allow it because we not high mifra pare." Second, we say, right, it could be. Right. This is the issue. He comes to court and he says like this, very innocently. Oh, well, the guy's going to pay me back half, so I just want one of 50. But really, maybe he paid the entire thing, right? And then what's going to happen? The lova says, give me the shtar. That's what happens. It was a loan of 100, and he paid back 100. So he says, show me the shtar. And what does the guy say? I don't have the shtar, right? And he'll write a shovar. And then, 1 second, let me just get this straight. The malva will write a shovar on the... Sorry, 1 second. Right, he'd already paid it back. And then the guy takes out, right, he says, show me the shtar, and he doesn't have the shtar. So he says, I lost it, and he writes a shovar. And then he goes and he takes out the shtar for 50 zuz. Right, you understand? The original was 100. And then he says, Amar le, hayachrinehu. This has nothing to do with the old shtar. He says, here's just a shtar of 50 zuz, right? The guy, if he takes out the 100 zuz, the guy will say, what do you mean? That's my shovar, I paid you. But then this time, right, he'll take out a shtar of 50 and he'll say, that's some new shtar. And the guy will think, I never saw that before, but yet it's signed and stamped and all good. And therefore, we don't allow him to do that because we're worried he might play games with it. Okay. We learned a lot of deception, methods of deception from this parak.